and a pleasant good afternoon to you wherever you may be, however you may be listening. This is indeed the Shukri Wright Show on 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford, Touch Free Forum Radio. Streaming nationwide on the TuneIn Radio app and globally on WMFO.org. Wherever you may be listening, however you may be listening to the program, thank you for making this show part of your Monday afternoon as I'm here with you for full 2 hours. For the first time in a little more than a month, yes, I'm here with you to do a full 2 hour show until 7 o'clock, and I know it's a busy night ahead for Boston sports as game 4 of the Boston Celtics Milwaukee Bucks series will play on. We'll talk more about that a little bit later on in the show, but I figured that we start the show talking about the Boston Bruins because, after all, they played yesterday. So let me first start out by saying that because the Boston Bruins and the Boston Celtics have been playing on alternate days, basically the Bruins playing on one day, then the Celtics on the next day, and the Bruins on the next day, and so forth, what I'm going to do is I'm going to alternate. You know, one segment I'll talk Bruins, next segment I'll talk about the Celtics and so forth. But I will try to sneak in some Red Sox discussion because, folks, we need to talk. We need to talk. So that's later on in the show. That's possibly during the second hour. Maybe. Just maybe. But for now, the Boston Bruins and the Carolina Hurricanes, round one of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Now, if you honestly and truthfully believe that the Boston Bruins would actually tie the series up at 2 games apiece after how it all started in games 1 and in games 2, raise your hands. I did. I honestly did. I expected that there was going to be tied up at 2 games apiece. Because frankly, I'm a firm believer that momentum in the Stanley Cup playoffs is a very fickle thing. 1 minute, it'll seem that you have all the momentum going your way and everything is going in accordance to how you'd expect it to go. And then all it takes is just one bounce of the puck to go your way, and now you got the ball rolling in your direction. That's the nature of the Stanley Cup playoffs. And that's precisely what you saw in regards to the Boston Bruins. Because let's be honest, between games 1 and 2, how many of us honestly screamed, or even in some cases, cursed at the TV or radio, however any old way that you consumed those first 2 games? I sure as hell did. I absolutely just lost it in game 2 because I was frustrated. I was mad. I was pissed off. I was pissed off to the point where I said, you know what? I can't watch this. I can't watch this. So I gotta tune out somehow, someway. I gotta absolutely say, you know what? I'm throwing my hands up. I cannot deal with the frustrating play of the Boston Bruins right now. I can't. But it's the Stanley Cup playoffs. And frankly, you just don't give up. You watch it through the end and just to see how the results play out. So that's what I did. Now, let's start out talking about what changed for the Boston Bruins. Because in order to talk about what changed for the Boston Bruins, you have to reflect on what went wrong in games 1 and 2. And if you have thoughts on the Bruins and the Hurricanes series so far, you can call in. This is a live program. I'm taking phone calls, 855-915-WMFO, 855-915-9636. What went wrong for the Boston Bruins in games 1 and 2? This is my take. The Bruins at times look absolutely outmatched physically and speed-wise. Those two things, it was abundantly clear through the first 2 games that this was a mismatch. I go back to game number 1 most notably. And as I'm watching that game, it just seemed like the Bruins, they were, in fact, in that game. They were. Although the final score would dictate otherwise, But the truth is, they were in the game until that ill-fated pinch by Matt Grzelcyk. And that's what broke open the flood watergates. So, even in that game, it appeared to me that the Boston Bruins had no answer to combat the physicality of the Carolina Hurricanes. They're heavy on the forecheck and their speed. Because this was a thing that was talked about locally prior to the start of the series. The speed of the Carolina Hurricanes. Can the Boston Bruins keep up? And in game one, the Bruins at times, and I do say at times because there were moments where they looked like they were able to keep up, but by and large part, they were not able to keep up with the Carolina Hurricanes. Lines 1-4, which just seemed like it was like a pack of army ants just keep coming and they keep coming. And there's no rest with whoever who's on the line for the Carolina Hurricanes. But in game two, the thing that I found to be the most maddening about the Bruins' loss in that game was, how is it that the Boston Bruins, even after everything that went on in game one, it just appeared to me that they were just ill-equipped to be able to handle the relentless surge of the Carolina Hurricanes, especially that third line. That third line of Carolina, and I talked about this in a Twitter space I did, I believe it was prior to game one. I talked about guys like Nino Niederreiter. I talked about guys like Vincent Trocheck. I talked about guys like Eric Staal, for example, or Jordan Staal, rather. I talked about those guys at length. How, apart from the guys that can score and put the puck in the back of the net, most notably Sebastian Aho, this is a team that absolutely will grind you to death. And if you go back to the games during the regular season, I pointed out the concerns that I had in regards to the Boston Bruins versus this team. They did not have a lead at any given point in any of the games they played against each other during the regular season. Game two, I remember thinking, this is a team that you have to score first. Because prior to game two, they hadn't even scored first in any of those games. So when Carolina scored, it really became, oh my God, here we go again. And then after that, it just became another reoccurrence of where the Bruins are going wrong. What is it that they need to do in order to right the ship? Because the thing that I kept thinking about over and over is, no matter what the Bruins try to do, heck, at one point, they broke up the top pairing, pairing in McAvoy and Lindholm. Even with them doing that, it didn't make a difference. It made no difference whatsoever. So in game two, I look back on this and I reflect on that game before I looked at what changed for the Boston Bruins. Is they just did not have an answer on how to get the puck past their third string goaltender. And pardon me, forgive me, audience, I do not know how to pronounce his last name. He's a Russian netminder that starts with the letter K. That's as far as that I will go. I'm not going to try to botch it up. But for those of you that saw the game and been watching all along, you know exactly who I'm talking about. So with that being said, they didn't have an answer. They made him to be the next Ken Dryden, which was the most maddening thing that I've seen in quite some time. Now, you want to go? Let's go to game three. I was at game three Friday night. I was there. When the Carolina Hurricanes scored first, it was like oh my God, here we go again. What the hell is going on with this team? They are being scored upon first again. Can this team come up with some sort of an answer? And did they ever? But what changed? I'm telling you. as of right now, it looks like that Charlie Coyle shorthanded goal changed everything for the Boston Bruins. Because once they scored, tied up the score at 1-1, the Bruins took off offensively. And then, also, the perfection line being reunited, it has begun to do absolute wonders. I think that in itself has changed the dynamic of the Bruins offense this series 100%. You take Jake DeBrusk off that top line and you put him on that second line with Halla and Taylor Hall, and you put Pasternak back on that top line, and you saw the results that it paid, that paid off in terms of the scoring, especially in game 4. Bergeron with the goal, Marchand with 2 goals and 3 assists, Pasternak with the goal. So you got your offense from your top line, from the perfection line that has been reunited. But overall, if you're a Bruins fan, you have to really like what you've seen so far. This series is not over. This series is tied. Now it's a best of three. It's a best of three. And another thing I'll add on to this first segment is, when you begin to really dissect and look at where the Boston Bruins are currently right now, as far as the series and as well as in terms of their game, I do think that this is still a work in progress. This is still a work in progress because why? Because the Boston Bruins are still figuring out the Carolina Hurricanes in terms of what are they going to do come game 5? What are they going to do in terms of their adjustment to on their end in terms of their game? I think it's something that it is very fair to ask and it's fair to wonder. Because let's be honest, they're going back to Carolina for game 5. Do you honestly think they're going to play the same way that they've been playing in games 3 and 4? No way. They're going to change it up. How? That is as good of a guess between you and I and the Mickey Mouse. Who knows? But the Boston Bruins game 5 is going to be enormous tomorrow night. No question. It is going to be enormous. Enormous in what way, do you ask? Obviously, the winner of game 5 goes up 3-2, and game 6 is here in Boston Thursday night. I'm just thinking in terms of calendar. It is Thursday night, game 6. So with that being said, let me pose to you this question. I'll leave you, the listener, with this one. If you are a Bruins fan, and if you're the Boston Bruins, what do you do in regards to the bottom six? What do you do in terms of the bottom six? Especially with that third and fourth line. Because I do think it is something that should give some thought in regards to how the Bruins adjust their lines moving forward for the remainder of this series, and should they move on for the remainder of the playoffs as well. If you're listening live, you can call in at 855-915-WMFO. 855-915-9636 is the number to call in to the radio program. We're going to take a music break, and coming up next, we're going to give you the overall thoughts on the Milwaukee Bucks and the Boston Celtics series so far. Game 4, as I mentioned in the opening, is tonight at 7:30. So I'm going to give you my thoughts on that series so far. Coming up next right here on the Sugar Ray Show. This is Sugar Ray. You're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford, Touchfree Farm Radio. Streaming nationwide on the TuneIn Radio app and globally on WMFO.org.
I'm Dr. Lester Grinspoon, Associate Professor Emeritus of Psychiatry at the Harvard Medical School. Back in 1966, concerned that so many young people were harming themselves through the use of marijuana, I began to review the medical and scientific literature to help clarify the nature of this harmfulness. Much to my surprise, I discovered that it was a substance remarkably free of toxicity. In fact, it is far safer than any pharmaceutical or recreational drug. There is no record of a single overdose death from its recreational or medicinal use. Marijuana is one of the most studied substances. I believe that it is high time that this country reconsider its stance on cannabis.
Them legalize marijuana.
Welcome back to the Shukri Wright Show on 91.5 FM, WMFO, and Medford Touch Free Farm Radio. Streaming nationwide on the TuneIn Radio app and globally on WMFO.org. The number to call in is 855-915-WMFO. 855-915-9636 is the number to call in. I'm here with you for a full 2 hours. I'm here with you until 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, as this is the first full show since pre-Ramadan. Ramadan ended a week ago. I've been gone for a few weeks, mostly because, one, I had been, you know, taking like half the show off. Like, I'll come in and do an hour of the show and then leave and get ready to do like the iftar in the evening. And then the last few weeks, especially with the last 10 nights of Ramadan, I had, you know, really scaled back much of everything that I was doing at the beginning of Ramadan. So now that Ramadan is over and the Eid holiday was a week ago today, I'm back. Roaring, ready to get back into the flow of things, back into the grind of doing radio and so forth and getting my reps in. And it's going to be a phenomenal summer. I wholeheartedly believe it is going to be a phenomenal summer. This is just the beginning. Memorial Day weekend is coming up, and we're going to have a lot to get into. Obviously, the Bruins right now in the midst of their playoff series against the Carolina Hurricanes, and the Boston Bruins are back in the series in a big way, tied up at 2-2. Something that the Boston Celtics are looking to do themselves tonight. Which is why we're going to use this segment to specifically talk about my take on the series so far between the Celtics and the Bucks. Because I didn't really get the chance to do that during the first series in the first round between the Nets and the Celtics, which the Celtics absolutely play like and look like the better team overall. This series has been a very interesting series so far between the Celtics and the Milwaukee Bucks, the defending NBA champion. Now, game one, I mean, well, we obviously know what happened in game one, but I'm just giving you my thoughts on the series so far. I thought game one was quite a wake-up call for the Boston Celtics, as that they are not the Brooklyn Nets. This is a team that is far more superior than the Brooklyn Nets. Especially when you talk about Brook Lopez. Obviously, you got to start with Giannis Antetokounmpo, the Greek Freak, as well as Bobby Portis. And although Chris Middleton is out with an injury right now, he's out indefinitely. We don't know when he will be back. But this is still a pretty solid all-around Milwaukee Bucks team. And I do think that game one was a bit of a wake-up call for the Celtics in terms of, hey, what you thought you were able to get away with in the first series against the Brooklyn Nets, this is a different animal altogether. Giannis Antetokounmpo might just be the best player in the world right now in the NBA. That's how good he is. Better than Kyrie, better than LeBron. Yes, better than LeBron. Better than Kevin Durant himself. So, game two, I mean, the Celtics, they absolutely responded in the most profound way possible. Jaylen Brown was red hot from the three-point line. The team in itself was red hot from the three-point line. Most notably, Grant Williams, a role player on the Celtics team, which goes to tell you just how deep this team really is, which is truly amazing to absolutely watch. And the Celtics, they bounced back in the biggest way possible to win game two. Game three, which was on Saturday, let's talk. Because if there's one thing that the Celtics have shown me in game three, and that is they have the ability to not play their best game and still come within striking distance of pulling a victory out on the road. That in itself is scary. But there is a bigger problem to be had that happened in game three that I hope and pray that doesn't happen again in game four tonight. What is that problem? The problem is that your best player did not show up, and that is Jason Tatum. Tatum scored a measly 10 points and was absolutely atrocious offensively in game three. I mean, that's just keeping it 100. If the Celtics are going to win this series, they need their best player to play like the best player. Just as if Milwaukee's going to win this series, they need Giannis Antetokounmpo, their two-time NBA MVP, and defending NBA champion to step up huge, even in the absence of Chris Middleton. And so far this series, we're talking about Giannis specifically. He's done exactly just that. Now, for the rest of the Milwaukee Bucks, they have certainly left a lot more to be desired if you are a Milwaukee Bucks fan. I think we can agree to disagree on that one. But as far as the Boston Celtics are concerned, Jason Tatum having a poor performance did not help matters for the Boston Celtics at all. Jaylen Brown did his best to bring the Celtics back into the game, in which he did, almost single-handedly, I must also add. But even he alone could not do it all by himself. And that's the thing that I look at for the Boston Celtics as we go into Game 4. One last thought before I even switch to my thoughts on Game 4 tonight. Marcus Smart and also the members of the Boston Celtics, can you just do me this one favor tonight, please? Stop. Stop complaining to the refs. Stop complaining about the referees. Because clearly, if we haven't learned anything about the NBA, is that the superstar is always, more times than not, going to get the call. It's been like that for years. This is no exception. What are you going to do? In the meanwhile, what you can do is make the adjustments that you need to make. Make the adjustments in terms of you cannot allow Giannis to absolutely outmuscle you in the paint. That can't happen. Because that happened way too many times. Your only best answer if you're the Boston Celtics is Grant Williams. And God bless his soul for him to even step into the paint, step into the lane, and take on a hard-charging Giannis in the paint to take on a charge. God bless his soul. Because he is an absolute train coming downhill whenever he drives down into the lane. That is a fact. So, the Boston Celtics, they're at a point where they have to really ask themselves this following question. What are the lessons that they learned from Game 3? For me, the answer is these three things in particular. Number one, first lesson, make sure you defend against the three-point line more effectively. Because I saw way too many times in Game 3, guys that are wide open for threes, and they're hitting them. Not good. That's number one. Defend better against the three-point line. And one of the things that was discussed, it wasn't discussed here, but it was discussed within the Boston sports media circles, and that is the series will ultimately be won at the three-point line. So far, that has proven to be true and pretty damn accurate if you ask me. Now, as far as Game 4 is concerned, the one thing I will say is this. I am confident that Jason Tatum is not going to play as badly as he did in Game 3. He's not. I'm willing to bet that he is going to have a better game in Game 4 than he did in Game 3. He is going to be more of an impact type of player in this game. It is very difficult for me to envision that Jason Tatum, as good of a player as he is and has been throughout this entire playoff run, that he is going to have two consecutive bad games. Because if there's one thing that we do know, is that Jason Tatum, whenever he has a poor performance, and the numbers show, the numbers don't lie, but whenever he's had a poor performance, he has always, and I do mean always, had a tremendous bounce back performance. And the numbers that Celtics radio play-by-play broadcaster Sean Grandy tweeted out earlier, which I thought was really profound in its own right, shows exactly why Jason Tatum is primed to have a bounce-back night. And I think he's going to. So this is what This is what he tweeted out about 5 hours ago. Three times in 2022, Jason Tatum has failed to shoot 30% from the floor. In the three games that followed those games, he shot 61% from the field, 81% inside the three-point line, and he scored 96 points in those 104 minutes that he played. Which tells me, expect Jason Tatum to put on a clinic in game four tonight. I expect Marcus Smart to be better tonight in game four than he was in game three. But you also hope that Al Horford will continue to play at a high level. And he's having an amazing playoff run so far. If anything, whenever Tatum and Brown had gotten called offensively, Al Horford has been there more times than not. He's been there more times than not to answer the bell for the Boston Celtics offensively. And he pretty much damn near brought the Celtics back from the dead in the fourth quarter in game three, but his heroics alone were not even enough. If you got any thoughts on the Celtics game four tonight, call me at 855-915-WMFO, 855-915-9636. I'm here with you until 7 o'clock tonight. Game four, Celtics at the Bucks, is tonight at 7:30. Big game. Cannot wait. A lot of question marks and a lot of storylines. And I think there's none more bigger, if you're a Celtics fan, than can Jason Tatum rebound from those horrible numbers that he put up in game three? Can he? And the answer is a resounding yes. But will he? We'll find out in about 2 hours' time. Also, I will tell you this one thing, though. If there's one thing that the Celtics can hang their hat on from game three, they did have a late game offensive surge in the final latter stages of game three. And I think that confidence from the end of game three will certainly carry through in game four. As the Celtics obviously face a must win, they have to tie this series up tonight before the series shifts back to Boston for game five, which will be on Wednesday night. So I think it's going to be very fascinating to see what the Boston Celtics do, but especially Coach Ime Udoka. Because I think it's very fair to say that tonight could very possibly be the season for the Boston Celtics. It could be. Because if they fall behind 3-1 to Milwaukee, I have a very difficult time seeing the Boston Celtics being able to rattle off 3 straight wins against the defending NBA champions. I just don't see it. So yes, tonight is do or die for the Boston Celtics. How will they respond to the pressure? We'll find out in 2 hours. But I will tell you this much too. Tonight is going to be absolute must-watch TV if you're an NBA fan, especially if you're a Celtics fan, of course. So, we're going to step aside and take a music break. Coming up next, there is a player in these playoffs that is certainly taking on a new meaning of being the villain in Boston. I'm going to tell you exactly who that is and why that particular player has crawled underneath my skin. Keep it locked in right here to the Shukri Wright Show on 91.5 FM WMFO. In Medford, this is yours truly, Shukri Wright, here with you until 7. You're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO and Medford Touch Free Farm Radio, streaming nationwide on the TuneIn Radio app and globally on WMFO.org.
Wake up and text. Text and eat. Mm-mm. Text and catch the bus. Text and miss your stop.
Wait.
Text and be late to work.
Sorry, I'm late.
Text and work. Text and pretend to work. Text and act surprised when someone calls you out for not working.
Who, me?
Text and meet up with a friend you haven't seen in forever.
Hi.
Oh, hey.
Text and complain that they're on their phone the whole time. Text and listen to them complain that you're on your phone the whole time.
Ugh.
Text and whatever. But when you get behind the wheel, give your phone to a passenger. Put it in the glove box. Just don't text and drive. Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
To some people, the sound of a baby babbling doesn't mean much. But that's not necessarily true. By 6 months, they're combining vowels and consonants. By 9 months, they're trying out different kinds of sounds. And by 12 months, their babbling is beginning to take on some meaning. Especially if there's no babbling at all. Little to no babbling by 12 months or later is just one of the possible signs of autism in children. Early screening and intervention can make a lifetime of difference and unlock a world of possibilities. Take the first step at autismspeaks.org. A public service announcement brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Shukri Wright Show on 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford, Tusk Free Farm Radio, streaming nationwide on the TuneIn radio app and globally on WMFO.org. The number to call in is 855-915-WMFO, 855-915-9636. We have had already a very eventful first hour of the program. We opened the show talking about the Boston Bruins series against the Carolina Hurricanes, and as well as during the last segment, we talked about the Celtics and the Bucks series as well. That continues on with Game 4 tonight at 7:30, and as we are now entering the final segment of this first hour of the show, I figured that this one particular story that happened today is something that I think it needs to be talked about, because one thing that I absolutely love about the playoffs, whether it be MLB, the NFL, NHL, or the NBA, is that it does have the propensity of creating villains. And in sports and in life, the story is always better when there is a villain. When there's a villain to root against and there's a villain to hate or hate on, it makes the story all the more meaningful and entertaining. Let's be frank. No story in life and no story that can be conjured up, created, and so forth will have any sort of meaning or balance if there isn't a protagonist and a antagonist as well. The NHL playoffs, the Stanley Cup playoffs, the best playoffs there is in professional sports, is no shortage of that at all whatsoever. I'll be the first to tell you that I think if there's one thing that I absolutely love is the fact that this series is only 4 games old and we already have a new villain in town. No, it's not the New York Yankees. Yes, the Yankees have been the villain in Boston sports for forever. Any New York team, for the fact of the matter. But that's not who and what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is the Carolina Hurricanes defenseman, Tony DeAngelo. That's who I'm talking about. Because if there's one thing that we have seen from Game 4, is that it is abundantly clear that Tony DeAngelo has become public enemy number one in the city of Boston. And it's actually quite comical how he has gotten to this point. I mean, you talk about, oh man, you want to go back to Game 4, in which every single time that he touched the puck, he was basically getting the P.K. Subban treatment, in which that if y'all may remember, if you're a certain age, you remember when P.K. Subban was a Montreal Canadian, and every single time that he touched the puck at TD Garden or TD Bank North Garden, depending on how old you are, he'd get booed. He'd get booed by Bruin fans. Tony DeAngelo got that kind of treatment in Game 4. And if anything else, it showed me that this guy has become the ultimate villain, and it doesn't help matters that this guy wants to try and take liberties at Curtis Lazar like a complete dink that he is on the ice. Like, my gosh, am I supposed to be surprised by any of this? No. None of this to me is a surprise. The reason why it isn't is because this is exactly who he was when he was in New York. And I think that Bruin fans are beginning to really see this almost ad nauseum now, in which that when you play a team 5 or 6 times in a series, you get tired of certain players real fast. You know, like the old adage, French fries left in the wide open air gets old, stale, and dry real fast. That is Tony D'Angelo for you. He's the old, stale, and dried up French fry who was hot out of the oven or the deep fryer and now is of absolute no use to you. That is exactly what he is. Now, I want to touch on something that happened earlier today that I think it deserves discussion and it deserves to be talked about. So, I was in Back Bay earlier today, in which I got tagged in a tweet from the Gresham Keefe show on WEEI. Shout out to the show, and I've become really good friends with the program, in which this story basically came out. It was Tom and Bridgewater who called into the show, in which he talked about how he has 2 16-year-old sons who were also at the game, at Game 4, that were basically booing Tony D'Angelo. And they were basically saying, just boo, you suck, boo, like typical 16-year-olds. Like, we were all 16 at one point, so we understand. What does Tony D'Angelo do in terms of a response? You want to come out here? Come down here. Come down here and boo me. First and foremost, you jack wagon. And I'm not cursing because I'm on radio. And for those that are watching the stream live on Twitter at the moment, this is just for this particular segment. I'm not going to curse. I'm not going to use profane language because this is my job. This is my career, and I'm not going to risk it. However, what I will say is this. So I made a video in which that I really reamed into Tony D'Angelo in particular because, like, dude, you want to go after a 16-year-old? What the hell are you doing? What are you trying to prove exactly? You're proving to the world what? That you're a tough guy? No. You're a wuss. You are an absolute wuss. A grown man going after children? Oh, my God. Spare my heart. Oh, I'm such a tough guy. I'm going to go out to 16-year-olds and show them who's a tough guy here. I play in the NHL. So the 16-year-old kids, they are absolutely going to get their faces pummeled into because I'm the tougher guy here. Woo! Like, really, this is what little boys do. This is precisely what boys do when they feel that they need to show that they're the tougher guy in the room. And in this case, in a public space or public forum. Like, it genuinely blows my mind. Like, seriously, how the Carolina Hurricanes decided that they were going to bring him on. Yes, I know it's only a 1-year contract, but still. But this man has become such a villain now in this series that I already didn't like him when he was with the New York Rangers as a player. I mean, all politics aside and whatever. But I didn't like him then. I despise him even more now. Just his on-ice antics. And there are people that say, well, what about Brad Marchand? Brad Marchand, at least, there's a line. And I know that's going to sound real comical to Twitter space and to everyone that's listening to the program. And which, by the way, you can call into the show at 855-915-WMFO. 855-915-9636 is the number to call into the show. And at least he doesn't need to go as far as Tony D'Angelo did in Game 4. And that is particularly the point that I want to make. Yes, he is the rat. Yes, he has a reputation in his own right. But if we're going to compare apples to oranges here, Brad Marchand is not even close to the scum that Tony D'Angelo is. So there was a quote that was written on WEI.com, which is on the website now. And I want to read you this quote here. So Tony D'Angelo met with the media in Carolina today. That really caught my attention, what he said. This is what he said. Quote, "There is no panic in our locker room. 2-2 series, and we're back in front of a much louder building than it was in Boston. So we'll be fine." He said, making sure to put an emphasis on much. Much louder. Okay. So, I want Bruin fans out there to remember this. He said, basically, we're back in front of a much louder building. Basically calling the Garden pretty damn close to being a morgue. Hard to believe, isn't it, right? Oh, yeah. You better damn believe it. And then, oh, by the way, I'll give Carolina some credit. Do they have loud fans? Sure. But let's be honest. That's not a hockey city. That's not a hockey city in the likes of, like, Boston, for example. Please. But the fact that he went as far as to take a shot at Bruin fans that packed the building for Games 3 and 4, and as I mentioned, I was there for Game 3 on Friday night, it should give you even more juice going into Game 6. Because we do know that there will be a Game 6, and it is, in fact, on Thursday night at the Garden. This guy has some serious bleeping balls. Like, it is astounding to think that this guy... Man, listen, this guy had the unmitigated goals to go after kids. But then, I'm just amazed that even with D'Angelo's history of off-ice issues, which includes three punishments for abusing officials, a benching for a maturity issue when he's with the Rangers, and then the article actually mentions the bombastic use of social media that includes challenging at least one fan to a fight, which really, truly blew my mind. I want to pause here. We're going to see if we can take this call. So, we do have a phone call coming into the program. There's Connor in Andover calling into the Shuker Ed Show at 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford. What's going on, Connor?
Hey, Shukri. Great job on the show, but I was just calling in.
Thank you.
You know, you just switched over to, you know, Tony D'Angelo kind of crapping on the city of Boston and how we're so quiet and everything like that. And it just, I wanted to call in and I wanted to get your take on especially for the Bruins, we love a villain, right? You look back to 2019 with in the Hurricane series, that series, Dougie Hamilton was getting booed.
Oh, yeah. We all remember that for sure. Definitely.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, you brought up PK Subban. But to that point, the Hurricanes are almost shooting themselves in the foot. And they are giving Bruins fans and even the Bruins on the ice themselves so much fuel to beat them, where they were up 2-0, and now they just keep giving them opportunities to get momentum. And I think it's all Bruins from here on out. I'm curious on your thoughts. I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you for the phone call, Connor from Andover. And to your point, it does give the Bruins and Bruin fans even more ammunition. Like, why give fuel to the most rabid fan base in the NHL and calling the Bruin fans that packed the house at TD Garden not loud? Because I'm going to read you this quote again. You see, it's not so much what's said, it's sometimes what's not said. And I think that has to be emphasized in this particular situation. So this is what was said in the quote. "There's no panic in our locker room. 2-2 series, and we're back in front of a much louder building than was in Boston, so we'll be fine." So you're basically saying that we weren't that loud. We weren't that quote-unquote rabid in comparison to the fans down in Carolina for games 1 and 2. Duly noted. So I want Bruin fans, all of you out there, to take that quote, frame it, put it on a wall somewhere, and remember that for Game 6. And if all goes well, I do intend to be there. We'll see. We'll see. God willing. But man, I also want to point out something that Connor said in the phone call in terms of Dougie Hamilton when he was a Carolina Hurricane back in 2019. I mean, Dougie Hamilton was despised because of the fact that he was just soft when he was a Boston Bruin. I mean, that's just one reason among other reasons. But he had a history of being that soft player that didn't live up to his potential when he was a Boston Bruin. So that's one for goodness sakes. And then the other part of it is, in terms of Subban was just public enemy number one because he was a Montreal Canadian. And he always had that stench of being a Canadian. So whenever he came to the Garden as a visiting player, going back to when he was in Nashville, then getting traded to the New Jersey Devils, he was going to get booed every single time. But Tony DeAngelo, on a whole other level, he's just a scumbag. That's the nicest way that I could put it on radio without going a bit further, if you will. So, the number to call in is 855-915-WMFO, 855-915-9636. Here's the number to call in. I'm here with you until 7 o'clock. I'm here with you for another hour here on the Strictly Right Show on 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford. You can stream the show live on the TuneIn radio app and globally on WMFO.org. So, we're about 90 minutes away from the 6 o'clock mark of this show. We're going to step aside for a music break. Coming up next, we got to talk. And I did promise you at the beginning of the show that I was going to touch on the Boston Red Sox, but I have to do this. But we got to talk. If you weren't concerned before, I think you should be concerned now. I'm going to give you exactly my thoughts on the Red Sox season thus far. Coming up next right here on the Strictly Right Show on 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford. This is Strictly Rights. You're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford. Touch Me Farm Radio, streaming nationwide on the TuneIn Radio app and globally on WMFO.org.
It's Thursday night, and you're grabbing drinks with some friends. Started off with a pitcher for the table, which quickly becomes two. There's pool. And there's the photo booth.
All right, everybody, squeeze in. Say cheese!
Followed naturally by an order of wings. And another.